ladder up.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 111 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Cervich, who is the birthday girl, by the way. Yay!
Yes, hello, and happy new year. I was like, oh, wait, I have to say something.
Wait, that's me. Yes, so it's Linda's birthday, everybody. So everybody wish Linda a happy birthday if you haven't already.
Happy birthday.
Woo!
Yes,
yeah,
thank you.
And we are also joined by Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, Linda. Hello, Allison.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year and happy birthday.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Happy New Year, everyone. So far, 2022, at least in the baseball world, has been extremely uneventful because unless you've been living under a rock, you know that MLB is still in lockout. So not much has occurred since the last time we recorded. We talked about, you know, the Mets hired Buck Showalter and they made all their pre-lockout signings. So Mets like pretty much were one of the teams in a better position entering lockout than most other teams because they had most of their stuff taken care of. But there is a couple of notes, Mets notes to talk about. Mainly the one thing that did happen is that we learned just today that the first member of Buck Showalter's staff has been hired, or at least is like really close to being hired. I don't think all the like finer details have been ironed out, but the Mets are set to add Joey Cora to Buck Showalter's coaching staff as the third base coach. He is, for those of you who don't know, he's Alex Cora's brother, and he's been the Pirates' third base coach since 2017. So we have our first coaching staff member hired.
And didn't they also just sign Juan Soto's brother to a minor league
game? Yes. They sure did.
They're just hiring everybody's brother.
This
is a family business.
And of course, because, you know, like, well, first of all, because there's nothing else going on, everybody's just looking at video of like Juan Soto's brother taking batting practice and just dreaming that he's going to be,
just as good as Juan Soto,
which
is his brother. Is he still fit? No, I think he's with the White Sox now, isn't he?
Oh, I don't remember. Good question. I thought he was still with the Mets. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, he's Cespedes' brother? Yoklis?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Yoklis.
Yeah. I can't remember where he went.
I'm going to look.
Yeah, everyone was looking at him taking batting practice, and he posted like an Instagram of like him wearing Mets gear, and everyone was really hyped about that. I mean, if he's even a fraction as good as his brother, it's quite exciting. And I think that there was also... like he's still a teenager, right? I mean, Juan Soto is young.
He's still young, yeah. So I can't imagine he's like, can't be more than like
Juan
18.
Soto.
He's White Sox.
Yoklis, yeah, I thought so.
I think he's 18, maybe.
Let's see. Cespedes' brother is 24?
Juan Soto's.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I just know that he intends to sign during the international signing period, which starts on January 15th, by the way. But like, I don't know, like, can they do that? I assume they can during the lockout. Can they do international signings?
I mean, since it's minor league, I would assume yes.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, that's exciting. And he has a sweet lefty swing, just like his brother. So I think that there was also some hype on Mets Twitter about like, oh, if his brother is there, what about when Juan Soto becomes a free agent?
like signing Manny Machado's brother-in-law.
I know, right? I had that same thought, but regarding Manny Machado, we've now hired his manager, his favorite manager.
That's true.
And Manny Machado is an opt-out after next season. So I'm just saying. Well, bring in all the stars by bringing in their associates.
It's not a bad plan. Manny Machado has that out, like that opt out, that would preclude us getting Chris Bryant,
which would make me very happy. Birthday, Chris Bryant.
Yes, happy birthday to Chris Bryant.
Yes, happy birthday, yes. Chris Bryant.
My birthday twin.
You are 29.
He's 30.
Wait. Oh. Yes, yes.
He's a big 3-0, so I hope he's celebrating accordingly by drinking one beer and calling 911.
drinking one beer and dialing Sandy Alderson's cell phone. Sorry, I meant to say 911.
Sandy Alderson.
Well, not Sandy Alderson.
Dialing, you know. Who's our GM now? Epler.
Dialing Billy Epler's cell phone.
No, dialing Steve Cohen himself.
Yeah, go straight to the top, man. Just bypass everybody else.
That
go
would
to the
be
guy with the money.
That would be collusion and not allowed. But
we're just saying, if he drunkenly texts him, you can't blame him for that.
I feel like I need to put on my that fast voice that comes on after like car commercials and drug commercials. Like,
oh yes,
like no, oh, this podcast does not endorse collusion.
These are the side effects of this medication: heartburn, stomachache,
nausea, heartburn,
potentially die.
Dialing Billy Epler's cell phone.
Turning 30 means you will dial Billy Epler's cell phone number.
I mean, at Chris Bryant, please do sign with the Mets after the lockout. Please.
Don't actually talk to Steve Cohen because.
No,
I was being facetious.
He'll get a good dinner out of it if he texts Steve Cohen. Though.
It's true.
Yeah. Will it be salmon? Will it be chicken?
Chicken parm.
Yeah. Worked so far.
If I were Richard Staff, I would suggest salmon parm, something highly cursed.
You have to be vaccinated to visit Steve Cohen, which was another thing we learned.
Oh yeah, that's true.
That's good.
So, which we like. We love to hear it, folks.
Yeah.
Oof. Hopefully Chris Bryant's vaccinated. He is, right? Is he? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know if that was ever revealed.
I don't think it was. Wasn't he the player that was just like, I'm not going to reveal it?
No, that was Rizzo.
Okay. I knew it was a Cub or a former Cub. I just couldn't remember
which
one. Well,
the Cubs had one of the lowest vaccination rates among, like,
that's not surprising.
Yeah, all of MLB. Yeah. So... the odds are not in his favor as far as like the odds are not in our favor as far as hoping Chris Bryant is vaccinated, but hopefully he is. But yeah, I like the Mets have made their first, hire as far as, or close to making their first hire as far as their coaching staff, as far as Buck Showalter's coaching staff. And from the article that, broke the news that the Mets are set to add Joey Cora, the article goes on to say, John Russell, who served as Showalter's bench coach in Baltimore, is among the possibilities for that role at the Mets. Team officials were also impressed with Dodgers first base coach Clayton McCullough in his interview for the managerial opening that went to Showalter and could look to hire him as bench coach. So there's some speculation about like potential bench coach hires in that article too. So wouldn't be surprised if that is the next thing that comes down the pike as far as like announcements. So yeah, I mean, even though lockout's happening, like Showalter still has to fill out his staff, and those things can all happen during lockout and probably will be happening over the course of the next couple weeks.
And it said he's also going to visit Fort St. Lucie because he's never been down there.
It did say that, which was really cool. Good to know that he's like, you know,
he's invested, he's doing stuff.
He's eager and ready to go, which is very nice to hear. I would expect nothing less. I'm not surprised by that at all. That's his personality too. Very gung-ho and ready. So we already talked about Chris Bryant.
I jumped ahead.
A fairly obvious. Oh, no, no, no.
I wished him a happy birthday. That was my fault.
It's true. It's all Linda's fault for wishing him a happy birthday.
Well, it's also Kevin Pillar's happy birthday. We hardly knew Kevin.
Happy birthday to former Met Kevin Pillar. You will always be remembered for being the guy that got hit in the face with the ball and came back.
Oh my God.
But the we already talked about Chris Bryant as far as like, I think that is, you know, sort of the most obvious like player move that people are talking about as far as things that the Mets should do after the lockout, because that would really complete the offense and, you know, really make the lineup complete. But
I will be writing an article about it eventually, because I asked the Mets to sign Arenado last year, which they did not do. So, and they now once again have a third base opening. So you got a second chance here, Mets. Don't blow it. I mean, you do with JD, but
I mean, and that doesn't, well, I mean, that doesn't necessarily preclude JD from being on the team. It's just like,
because he was very good off the bench last year.
If you just push guys like that to bench roles, it makes the team a lot deeper and a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the point.
I was gonna say, JD Davis being your pinch hitter just strengthens the entire team as a whole.
Yes.
Like, that's not the worst thing in the world.
So other things that, you know, will probably be on the Mets radar, after the lockout, we know that per a recent rumor, from over the weekend, that the Mets had been in contact with Jerry's Familia's camp prior to the lockout. I mean, I don't necessarily think he's the right move, but the Mets do need to bolster their bullpen. They need to make like one or two really solid bullpen signings, because Aaron Loop has departed, which means they have literally no left-handed pitchers in their bullpen, by the way. So that's an issue. You can't just rely on like May and Diaz in the late innings. They need, you know, some more help in that regard.
Who's even available though?
There's a fair amount of people. Like Andrew Chafin, for example, is available. He's somebody that I could see them going after. I'd have to look at the like.
Hang on, I'm looking.
MLB trade rumors.
They want to bring back Familia. I am open to it as long as he's not going to be your like ninth inning guy. Like, he needs to be like your sixth inning. My starter didn't last that long, like kind of mop up duty. Or if like you have, I don't know, like McGill start and you need to pull him after the seventh, then you bring in Pham for the sixth. Like, I would be open to that, but he like should not get like high leverage innings anymore.
Kenley Jansen is available.
Yeah, Trevor Rosenthal, Brad Hand, Ottavino. Oh, not Hand.
Ryan Tapera is a really interesting name. He's like a right-handed setup.
Cy Young vote-getter Ryan Tapera.
Hansel's so hot right now. Hansel Robles is available. He's available.
So there are guys.
Oh my God, I forgot Robert Gazelman was a free agent.
He'll be in LA with Thor eventually.
Probably. Yeah. There are guys available. Hunter, I mean, bullpen
Hunter
guys.
Strickland's available, guys. We LOL. Should totally get him again.
I mean, bullpen guys are the type of guys that are always around, and they can just pick up one or two of them. I mean, they made the Aaron Loop signing like pretty late in the offseason last year.
I'm so pissed we lost him, though.
I know. Me too. It's kind of annoying. And he wanted to stay a Met. It's like really frustrating. Like, it wouldn't have taken that much money. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
But wasn't that when they were in between GMs at the time?
I think they just didn't have their shit together. So they didn't, you know, they lost out on. I mean, that's how they lost out on Syndergaard too, basically. Yeah. Speaking of which, they do need, I mean, the Scherzer signing is great, obviously, very for it. They do probably need one more starting pitcher. And whether that comes in free agency or trade, there are still, you know, some free agent starting pitchers available that, you know, I assume they're not going to go for another like big name. Plus, most of the big names are off the board anyway. They're not going to sign someone like a Kershaw because
wouldn't it be amazing?
It would be, but he would command a similar contract to Scherzer. Not quite as high probably, but a similar contract, you know, because like it would be AAV, like not a lot of years sort of situation. And I don't think they're going to take that on.
They have like since I forget what year it is, they would have the top three pitchers by ERA in all baseball if they did that.
Yeah,
I know.
That's pretty incredible.
That's why I think it would be insane. I would love that, but it's not going to happen.
I know that the Mets had expressed interest in Yusei Kikuchi in the past before the lockout. His name was loosely connected with the Mets. I don't think in any sort of serious way, but just as someone that they were like interested in. And he remains available, like that sort of tier, like, you know, the Steven Matz-ish tier of pitchers. They could use someone else from that tier, or they could trade. They can make a trade. I saw, I don't remember exactly what, I saw a trade proposal from Pat Ragazzo of Sports Illustrated, who incidentally is from my hometown, which I did not know until recently. Cool. When my brother literally DM'd me on Twitter and was like, you know, Pat Ragazzo is from our hometown, right? I played football. Ah. With him. And I was like, what? Oh my God, what? In high school. Yeah. They played football on the same football team. Anyway, weird coincidence. But I saw that he had written up a trade proposal for Sports Illustrated to get Sean Manea from the A's, which I think would be a good target. I don't remember what he gave up in this theoretical trade. I am sorry, Pat. I'd have to find the article. Let me see. I know this because I wrote it up for Morning News that morning.
Well, and they were also dangling. There was the rumor they were going to dangle Jeff McNeil.
There was that rumor. It was like a 5 moves the Mets should make in the new year. And yeah, trade for Sean Manea. And I'm trying to see if he proposed like what sort of return that would take. I know that Carlos Rodon is another free agent.
I would look at Carlos Rodon.
So would I.
He's a lefty. Yeah.
Injury prone, but yeah. So here's the Sean Manea. They could potentially offer a high upside position player with multiple years of control left, such as Jeff McNeil or Dom Smith, along with a low level prospect. So, and there were rumors prior to the lockout that the Mets were going to dangle Jeff McNeil, like Linda mentioned, in trade. So that's one potential route they could go, is to get a higher quality starting pitcher than they might be able to get on the free agent market via trade. I'm not necessarily in favor of trading Jeff McNeil. I understand why the Mets and maybe others have soured on him because of, you know, his poor season last season and his, you know, very obvious poor attitude about it on the field. But I still think that the Mets would regret selling low on him if they decide to trade him. And I think it, you know, unless they sign Chris Bryant, it really thins them out in position player depth to do that. And I don't
think they have that. Escobar now too.
They do. Yeah. But right now, both Escobar and McNeil are penciled into starting roles, unless you think that Robinson Cano is the everyday second baseman, which I don't think that that's true. So I think that unless you sign Chris Bryant, who would then become like the everyday third baseman and push, you know, that would push Escobar to second base and McNeil maybe to the bench. Unless you do that, I do not think that it's wise to trade Jeff McNeil.
And I was going to say, we got to remember second base, Robinson Cano is coming back.
Right. And I'm kind of, I mean, obviously I was going to say, we don't know how negotiations are going in this regard. We do know there are no negotiations happening. Lockout is not ending anytime soon, but we don't know what the new CBA will look like when it does come, if it does come, and what the DH will look like, and if there will be a universal DH. Oh, that's true. So yes. if there is a DH, I imagine that will be Robinson Cano's default role on the team.
I just pretended that doesn't exist because I don't.
Kellyanne is burying her head like an ostrich and ignoring it.
I know.
Yep, but it's not happening.
They could probably even buy out Cano, and then you can always have Pete be your DH and then Dom be your first baseman.
Yeah, they could do that. I think it depends on how washed Cano looks in spring training, such as it is, if there is a spring training to speak of.
Although I have to give Pete credit. He really did work really hard in his defense. He was much improved, and Dom's not an everyday player.
No, I don't believe that he is. If they could get Sean Manea in return for Dom Smith, I'm sorry. I love Dom. I love him as a person. I'm driving him to the airport. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not even necessarily that I'm like so much higher on Jeff McNeil than Dom Smith. It's more just like when you make trades, you have to draw from a position of strength to bolster a position of weakness.
Practicality at this point.
Right now, Dominic Smith is a man without a position and probably not an everyday starting caliber player. Whereas Jeff McNeil, whether you think he's a starting caliber player or not, and that can be argued based on how much you value his 2021 performance and how much you think that is indicative of his performance moving forward, right now he is an everyday starting player based on the roster that they have right this moment. So you, like, in my opinion, you can't trade him. He's the starting second baseman right now. Whereas you can trade Dom Smith because he doesn't have a starting position at this time.
And I'm pretty sure me and you saw Sean and I, you were there for Thor bobblehead night, right?
I was.
He started that game.
He did.
That's against Zach Wheeler.
Yes.
So I remember being so pissed because he was,
they didn't do shit off him.
No, they didn't. And he even got a hit off Wheeler.
Oh yeah, he did. I forgot about that.
Runs. I was like, how the hell do you give up a hit to an American
League pitcher? League pitcher. Come on now.
I was so pissed, but then they ended up coming back and it was a Wilmer walk-off. But I remember Wilmer walk-off in my seat for
that. Wilmer's final walk-off. That was a very memorable, one of my more memorable Mets games.
It was. And I think that was one of Duda's last hits as a Met.
It was. Mm-hmm.
One of Darno's. Yeah. No, Darno, I think, came back the following year.
Yeah. But
Grandy. It was Grandy. I think he pinch ran that game.
Yeah.
Of Grandy's last games, one of Duda's last games. Yeah, that was that in Wilmer's last walk-off.
It was such a fun game. But yeah, getting a picture like that would be really useful.
I was going to say he's a quality, fourth, fifth starter. And I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Cover your ears, Kellyanne.
Oh, God.
You cannot go into the season planning on David Peterson and Tyler McGill in your rotation.
Something
will have gone horribly, horribly wrong if you're planning
on it. No, I know.
But it's very valuable to have them as depth.
As depth, yeah.
Very valuable. But you cannot pencil them in. They need another starting pitcher. They absolutely need one more starting pitcher.
I was going to say, I think they need two, but
they need all the pitchers.
I say that every offseason, they need all the pitchers.
They do, but
for Luis Castillo, it's fine.
Realistically, we're getting one more decent one at best. They did it last year and they ended up going down to the very bottom of that depth. But I actually thought that they built adequate starting pitching depth last year.
No, they had. They all went down.
It just evaporated into thin air. And I think they're going to make more moves, or they should, after the lockout. They should make more moves like the Jordan Yamamoto. And I mean, they can make some of those moves because they can make minor league signings. So they can make some of those moves now. They should do those types of moves. Sign guys to minor league deals who have some major league upside. Bolster that, high minors, because we know that they don't have a lot coming from the system to help. We saw Sapucki and it wasn't good. So basically they don't really have anything coming.
And Matt Allen had Tommy John. I don't think he was close anyway, but
he wasn't really, but
Joey Lucchese's out this season, right?
Yes. I'm still so upset about that.
I wasn't sure August if it was
the earliest, but
sad but chirp noises.
Yes.
I know.
Sad chirp noise.
Can I name the podcast Sad Chirp Noises?
Yes.
That's a good title for this week.
It is, because there's not much else happening. But yeah, I mean, that's the Mets right now, such as it is. We're just kind of waiting for the lockout to end. We're waiting for them to fill out the rest of the coaching staff. Once the lockout ends, luckily the Mets are in the position where, they have to make moves after the lockout ends, but they've done all the big things. And they just need to make, although Chris Bryant would be another big thing, obviously.
Yes.
Hey, everyone. It's Nick Kwa, podcast critic for New York Magazine. From my humble beginnings as an avid listener to joining some of the best writers in the world at Vulture, I'm incredibly lucky to do what I do. So here's the thing. There are a ton of podcasts out there, and finding something new to listen to can be a bit of a mess. My newsletter, 1.5 Speed, is an attempt to make your life easier. Every week, we point you to a handful of podcasts that we think deserves your attention, with just enough context to help you decide if you want to give it a shot. Maybe you have your staples, but want to try something different for a change. Maybe you want something more experimental. 1.5 Speed doesn't discriminate. We've recommended everything from the Ezra Klein Show to a podcast recognizing a different frog every week. Enter your email at vulture.com/speed to get recommendations sent to you every Wednesday. The newsletter is free to sign up and completely free to read. Sign up for 1.5 speed at vulture.com/speed. By the way, I'm a 1.2 guy myself.
I still don't fully believe Scherzer is a Met. Like,
I know.
They're going to find some loophole and say he signed, like,
right
during the lockout and it's null and void. And he has to go back to the Dodgers or something.
At MLB and the goddamn lockout so I can buy a Scherzer jersey because I'm waiting until the lockout ends to buy one.
Because I won't
fully believe it until I see him in a Mets uniform. I know he had the Met hat on, but
that's how I feel as well.
I mean, well,
and having him and DeGrom back to back, I want to see DeGrom and then I want to see Scherzer. One right
now, it's gonna be so great. Like opening day and the next day. Ooh, well, not the next day since they always do the day off after, but you know what I mean. Ooh, games one and two. I'm getting chills just thinking about
it. Me too. And it just doesn't seem real. Like
it doesn't.
I have my sports passport, which is like this app where you like check into every game you go to.
Yes.
Which I need to download because I need to be better about tracking my games.
Yes. And then it tells you who your top performers are. And for the longest time it said Max Scherzer and I was pissed. I'm like, now I don't have to be pissed that I saw a really good Max Scherzer star.
I was going to say, if he stays your top performer, that's a good thing for the Mets.
Actually, Steve Finley from 1999 is my top performer.
Amazing. Amazing.
From Beanie Baby Day in 1999. I think he went like 6 for 6 and with like 3 home runs or something.
I'm trying to think fantastic. Who my top performer would be if I like had logged all the games I've ever been to.
It includes pitchers. So if you ever saw like a shutout, maybe.
Mine would be Jacob DeGrom. Easily.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, well,
Jake
I went to.
Jake is not on my list and I'm so upset about it.
Now I've only been to 2 Jake starts, so it's not, I don't think it would be enough, and they were both really good, but I don't think it would be enough for him to be my top performer. I don't know, I'd have to think about it, like, who's my
David
top
David Wright performer? Isn't on my I've, top performer.
That's amazing.
I've been to at least 4 DeGrom starts, at least. I can't.
I feel like I went to the most games. I went to the most games when I was in high school. So that would have been the like 06 era Mets. So it would have been like 04 to 08. So like who were the like best players? I mean, it might be David Wright, but I don't think I'm trying to remember any like standout David Wright moments that I witnessed in person. And I can't think of any. I mean, I can think of one, but it wasn't, it's not a good thing. I was at the game
retiring.
No. Well, I was at that game too, but yes. But I was at the game where he got hit in the head by Matt Cain. That was like
that's
probably
an ugly, ugly game.
That's the most emotional I've been at a baseball game. Like I cried because I thought he was dead.
Yeah,
like,
he was not moving. A while.
I can't tell you guys the sound that it made was harrowing, and like. I mean, this is a little bit of a preview of next podcast, but like I'm reading The Captain right now. And obviously he talks about it in the book and like his mom was like hysterically crying. And like, that was
understandably.
Like, I felt that deep in my bones because like, I was like, this man is dead. He's just been killed. Like it was horrible. It's like there was this game I went to once, and I wish I had the memory that my dad has, because my dad remembers every single damn baseball game he's ever been to and remembers like the score, who started, like he's encyclopedia baseball memory. I don't remember the exact circumstances, but I remember, and it was a player on the opposing team, which is why I don't remember exactly who it was. But I saw a guy break his leg on the field, was a horrific, a femur, just like snap. And that was really bad too. So those were like the worst baseball injuries I've like seen in person.
Well, I found Steve Finley. I found his, because I logged into my sports passport. So this is Steve Finley from May 30th, 1999. Now I'll read it and then I have a follow-up question. So he went 4 for 5 that day, 5 RBIs, 3 runs, 2 home runs, and a double. That was his stat line from Beanie Baby Day back in 1999.
I love it.
Now, amazing. Number 2 on my list is R.A. Dickey.
Oh, yes.
Robert Allen.
With his one hitter. How is that number one? To me, that beats.
Oh, I was at that game too. So that might be my top performer, probably.
So 9 innings pitched, one hit, no one runs, 13 strikeouts, 114 pitches, and a win. How is that not better than Steve Finley? Why is that? I don't know, man. And then number three, Kellyanne, this is for you.
Yes.
Wilmer Flores.
Yeah.
2016. Six for six. Four
oh my
RBIs.
God, the John Lester game.
Oh, the six for six game.
John Lester game. He had three runs and two home runs. That to me is better than Steve Finley's game, too.
John, he just ate John Lester for breakfast that
game.
That
was such a fun game to be at. Oh my God.
I remember that.
I'm so jealous you were at that game. I will always remember that game. Because I was at Cape Cod with my family. And so I was watching it with like six other people. And it was so fun.
Well, I remember that was the first time I met Chris McShane. And he said, I'm downstairs if you want to come down and say hello. So I went downstairs to the concourse. And they had Wilson Contreras pitching because it was a blowout at that point.
Yep.
And then Jacob deGrom pinch hit. So then Chris was like, oh, look, a catcher is throwing to a pitcher.
Very funny.
So I have a picture of that because when he said that, I was like, oh, that's awesome. So I have a picture of Wilson Contreras throwing to Jacob deGrom.
That's fantastic. I love when stuff, I just love like baseball when stuff like that
happens.
Wacky
baseball like that. But still, how is that? How are Dickey and Wilmer Flores not better than Steve Finley's game? Like, Steve Finley, of course, had an amazing game.
It probably has to do with some sort of weird, I wonder how they calculate it. Do you think it's win probability added?
Yeah, that could be.
That's probably it because that probably is what makes the Finley game better because what was the final score of that game? Like, did
10
he
won?
Oh, okay. I was going to say, cause
the Mets
did
were
he
very
like
bad that day? Cause Randy Johnson pitched.
I was like, did he help them win a close game or something? Cause obviously a lot of the Wilmer Flores stuff happened in lower pressure situations. So maybe the win
Dickie's
probability.
Game?
Yeah. But Dickey though, I would think the Dickey game has the highest win probability added is my
That's
guess.
That's inexplicable.
A shutout? Yeah, a one hitter.
That's inexplicable.
That would probably be my top performer, I imagine, if I'm thinking about it. Because I think that's probably the one that
I would think so. Want to hear this group of names?
are we remembering some guys?
Okay, we're remembering some guys. All right, since we have nothing else really much going on. Okay, so Steve Finley is number one.
This is going to be a short podcast.
Okay, I'll go through it quickly then. Okay, Steve Finley is number one. R.A. Dickey is number two. Wilmer Flores is number three. Kirk Nieuwenhuis is number four.
Yes, were you at Kirk's three home run game or whatever
it was?
I was.
Oh, my God. No, that wasn't his three home. That was his walk-off game. Where Costas was just like, what is the world coming to? Oh, my God, what a dick.
Yep, that was his three home run game. Okay, so number five is Christian Guzman on the Nationals from September 10th, 2008.
Wow.
Okay.
Zach Wheeler on August 4th, 2018.
Nice.
Noah Syndergaard, the last game of the season in 2018.
Okay. Oh, that was really good. I remember.
I think that was three hitter.
Yeah, that was really good. Against the Marlins?
It was a shutout. Yeah, it was nine innings pitch, five hits, no one runs, six strikeouts, 101 pitchers. Yeah, it was against the Marlins.
I remember that game. I was listening to it on the radio.
Pitchers.
Then here we go. Max Scherzer, July 9th, 2016. That was against Logan Verrett, and it was a disaster.
Oh my God.
Seven innings pitched, three hits, no one runs, nine strikeouts, 117 pitches, and the win.
You can do that for us.
Yeah, yes. So welcome, Max. Now, number nine, Steven Matz on the David Wright game.
Ah, yes, that's right.
Oh, my God, that game.
He pitched well.
He pitched well
that day.
The offense was not there.
Once again, the Marlins.
Yes, it's always the Marlins.
It's always
number 10.
The Mets play the dumbest games against the Marlins.
It's so frustrating.
I still remember that 20 inning game. That was a nightmare. That 20
inning game, the hit by pitch win that wasn't a hit by pitch. That was Marlins too.
The bullpen can't pitch for crap, so they always injure our players.
Yes,
the Khalil Lee Jhenashwy Fargas game was also the Marlins.
Yeah.
Everything's always the Marlins.
Marlins, both good and bad.
Everything weird is the Marlins,
or ridiculous or sad even.
Yeah,
because we were the first game after Jose Fernandez's passing,
and they were last day at Shea too.
Yeah,
which I was at.
My God.
Oh. Okay, my 10, number 10 is Vince Velasquez from April 9th, 2016.
Oh my God. Wow. Was that the game we were both at, Linda? Was that Vince Velasquez?
Where it was freezing cold.
Where it was freezing Vince Velasquez, yes, against Bartolo Colon, and yes, we lost like 1-0.
On a Ryan Howard home run.
Oh my freaking God. That was miserable. I was,
it was
so
absolutely miserable.
Angry.
My phone died. It was so cold. I was like, God,
I was, we were sitting
doing
in the upper deck in like the last row. I was in my winter coat,
oh my God,
shivering and angry and just sitting there with like the most, like the biggest scowl on my face the whole time.
I was so mad.
I was with my parents and my best friend, and my best friend's a Phillies fan. And she, and so I was just like, I'm so unhappy right now. I was sitting next to a Phillies fan. She's gloating. Oh, it was the worst. I was,
yeah,
like,
I was with my whole family. We got tickets. My brother got tickets. And because it was fireworks night, because I think it was like opening weekend or something.
Yeah, it was. And do you remember, yeah, how the fireworks kept screwing up and they kept doing, hello, it's,
yes,
me by Adele. And they played that like three different times.
Because it wasn't, yeah, because they couldn't get the fireworks to go. Oh, probably because it was so damn cold.
It was too cold, and right? They couldn't get the fireworks to shoot off. So,
oh,
like, three,
God,
different times, it was just like, hello, no, it's me, and nothing happened. I will never forget that as long,
wow,
as I live. It was so funny. Oh,
oh,
but it was,
God,
so
was
bad,
so
though.
Bad. I'm like, that just topped off, like, an absolutely miserable night at the mall.
Because I feel like if it had not been so awful in so many other ways, that fireworks thing would have been absolutely hysterical. But instead,
yes,
I was just really
hilarious,
angry.
Like, just, like, I remember saying, like, who cares? Just shoot him off.
Just do it.
I don't care. Just do it.
I just want to leave. Oh, God.
Because I remember my boss had tickets to opening day at the Yankees that week, and it got snowed out.
Oh, mm, God. Mm-hmm.
And then it ended up, she ended up going, like, I think the next day, and she was telling me, like, oh, it was very cold. You need to prepare yourself. Like, my mom bought a blanket, and I'm, like, sitting there, like, shivering under the blanket. I'm like, just get me out of here. I want to go home.
Yeah. Anyway, so this has been remembering some games and some guys on a pod of their own. We do have one like larger baseball matter to cover, and it is kind of related to the lockout in a roundabout way. So the big like kind of baseball story of this week is that MLB Network parted ways with Ken Rosenthal because of his criticism of Rob Manfred, which was a, you know, a very cowardly move on the part of the league, obviously. I don't want to, like, I've seen a lot of like obviously like Twitter's talking about this a lot because there's nothing else to talk about, and I've seen a lot of like people, especially like, you know, other writers in the industry insiders, I guess you could call them, like tweeting like very like, you know, glorifying things about Ken Rosenthal and like he's the best in the business and all this stuff, and like he's good at his job.
But he's not the best.
But let's not pretend that like Ken Rosenthal is some like bastion of journalistic integrity. He has carried, believe me, you guys, Ken Rosenthal has carried plenty of water for the league because of his position that he holds. He has carried plenty of water for the league. Now he writes one mildly critical thing, which clearly did take a certain amount of courage because he suffered the consequences for it. But, you know, he wrote like one mildly critical thing. It wasn't even that like harsh, let's be real, but it was correct. He wrote like one mildly critical thing about Rob Manfred and he got canned from MLB Network, or they cut ties with him, I guess I should say,
like his contract
was so petty,
incredibly petty. Ugh. Incredibly petty.
Like, how thin skinned at this point too, you've gotten so much criticism from fans.
What a
they were booing him at the last draft.
Yeah. What a horribly petty tyrant Rob Manfred is. And we are at the point. I mean, he was clearly unpopular before this lockout. He was already deeply unpopular. We are at the point where he has not a single ally among, like,
besides,
you know,
the owners.
Besides the owners. But he has not an ally to be found among the fan base, among probably most of the people that cover baseball. Who usually are doing the most work carrying water for the league. Like, it's at the point where he, you know, like, is pretty much universally despised by everyone.
Who ever thought, like, I can't believe I'm saying this, I want Bud Selig back. Good Lord.
Bud Selig was great compared to Rob Manfred.
That takes a lot to say, because he was bad.
Yeah, the bar was the floor, so now, like, Manfred's in the basement.
He's below the basement. He's in the ground in the roots.
Well, and I don't care, like we've said, Ken Rosenthal has had many issues in the past with how he covers certain topics, Trevor Bauer being one of them. Ugh. So, like, I'm not completely heartbroken about that, but I think the larger implications are what's bad. And yes, there's a tweet by Eugene Friedman that kind of summed it up, which I found. And he tweeted, if you ever wondered about the relationship between MLB Network and the insiders who report on its shows, MLB has pulled the curtain back completely. It's state-run media. Everything one of the pundits says should be viewed as state policy, not objective fact. So it's basically SNY, how we always say that's state media for the Wilpons. Like, yes, that's what MLB Network is now for Rob Manfred.
And it's what MLB.com is as well. Yep. Yep. And I think we should do well to remember this during a lockout that has, you know, I think revealed a lot about, you know, about the objectivity of the reporting that appears on MLB.com. Now, I'm not trying to disparage Anthony DiComo and, you know, who's, you know, he's the Mets writer for MLB.com, obviously, and the other, like, people who I'm sure work very hard and are very good at their jobs. And I'm not trying to disparage his, you know, his integrity or whatever. But I think that we need to bear in mind that, you know, the fact that they are, that MLB.com has stripped itself of all of its reporting about current players and all like, you know, even their likenesses, every shred of evidence of current players says all you need to know about the objectivity of that site and its reporting about the league.
Yeah. So, like, what do they, you know, makes you question, like, you know, this whole thing with, you know, the Dodgers and it being covered up, like, it makes you wonder, what aren't they reporting? Like, what do they know?
Yeah.
I think
what else is out there that they're not reporting?
Because they're not allowed to report.
Yes, because they're not allowed.
Or they don't want to, or, and personally, I think it's a lot.
And it'll be interesting to me to see, because obviously Ken Rosenthal is going to continue at Fox Sports and at The Athletic. He's still employed. He's still going to keep writing about baseball and reporting about baseball. Like, his day to day doesn't really change all that much, or, like, from the perception of, like, fans, like, Ken Rosenthal is still going to be tweeting scoops. He's still going to be doing all this stuff. I think
the sideline reporter at the Fox games.
Right. I think it'll be interesting to see if the shape of his stories at The Athletic change at all. And if they do, we should pay attention to how they do so.
Yeah. Hopefully they do.
Hopefully they do. Hopefully the chains are off a little more and he can report on more things, maybe, that previously he feared losing some sort of access to the league or whatever. I mean, there's always going to be that, even though he's not directly, you know, employed by MLB Network anymore in any way. Like, journalists always fear losing access, and so they will not report things that they probably should be reporting for fear of losing access.
Yep.
It's just bad all around. Rob Manfred has literally done everything in his power to, like between
ruin the sport.
And now, like, with the lockout too, he's just made it how obvious how in control the owners are and, like, how they view the players, and
not just the players, just the sport overall.
The sport as a whole, yeah. And
with deep contempt.
It basically is, yeah. And so, like, was his goal here to look worse? Like, does he not have PR people, like, telling him, you might not want to do this? Like, now is the time you decide to fire Ken Rosenthal when people are already angry?
I honestly, at this point, I don't think he cares.
Yeah, that's true. I guess he feels nobody can touch him because he's not in any danger of losing his job, even though he should be.
And what's interesting is that, you know, the thing that Ken Rosenthal got fired for, or, you know, got ousted at MLB Network for saying is basically like the is basically talking about the perception that Manfred is beholden to owners and out of touch with players. And he wrote about that, and that's why he was ousted. And by ousting him, Manfred is proving his point. Uh-huh. And like, so that's the ironic thing, is it's just like he's critical of you because you're out of touch and because you're clearly beholden to the owners and because of all these issues. And then he fires you for saying these things. It only makes him look worse because he's like,
because he looks bad, pretty bad already.
It's how you know that what Rosenthal is saying is true. I mean, it was already obvious that it was true, but you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
He just left no doubt at this point.
Right. It's sad.
How low can he go?
I worry
Don't
about
ask that question, Kellyanne. Do not answer.
Well, no, because I keep retweeting myself every time he does something. And it says, my tweet says, Manfred keeps finding new ways to be the worst baseball commissioner ever. Just when you think he can't stoop any lower, he does. Truly, it's a feat.
It is a feat. And
it is a feat.
I worry about the future of the sport.
Yeah.
I like, this lockout's not ending anytime soon. I think a lot of people would have been surprised if you had told them at the beginning of the off season that the season would be affected by this labor stoppage, but I'm not among them. I'm not surprised at all. In fact, I thought from the beginning that there was a strong chance that the season would be impacted. And I think it's getting stronger by the day.
Well, as soon as the Mets signed Scherzer, because of course we can't have anything nice.
We can never have nice things.
So now the season's going to be impacted.
I think the writers and moderators and general, like the commenters over at Amazing Avenue have been kind of expecting this for a few years now. We were always kind of saying, oh, the CBA negotiations are going to be interesting when they come around. It's definitely going to be a lockout, or it's definitely going to go into a strike. And I know that kind of subsection of Mets fans were prepared for it almost, I want to say.
Yeah. And I mean, the fact that there was a global pandemic only made it worse.
Worse. Yeah.
I mean, one would argue that in theory, the league should be more motivated to have a season in mm-hmm. the aftermath of the pandemic because of the lost revenue due to the pandemic. But
no, they have to have their way.
Yeah.
It's a power grab at this point.
Yeah.
Because they don't care. They don't care.
They don't.
They're not losing anything.
No. No.
Goodwill, they never had any to begin with.
Right. No. Right.
PR, they don't care.
No.
Anything they're losing, they don't give a crap about. Not one bit.
Every time that your favorite franchise cries poor about trying to sign XYZ player that the fan base wants, remind people that the owners are willing to lose far more money on this strike that is going to happen, if it does happen, on this strike that is going to happen, than it would cost to sign Chris Bryant or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that.
And they are willing to lose that
because they don't care.
Yeah.
The training staff, the training staff, the coaches, anybody that's a stadium worker, they're all going to be out of jobs too.
Yep.
So this is just going to have a ripple effect that's very not good.
Between the 2020 lost season to COVID and this, I seriously worry about the future of the sport. And I have never been one of those doomsday baseball is dead people, because people have always been saying that and it has never been dead. And the problems that baseball has had growing its fan base, namely due to the short-sightedness of people like Rob Manfred and the measures he's taken to grow the league that have only been counterproductive for the most part. But So I've never been one of the doomsday, like the sport is dying, oh my God, sort of people. But if there's a serious strike that impacts, you know, a good chunk of the season, I, between that and the lost COVID season, I seriously worry about the sport dying, or at least becoming like second class to the other major American sports.
Well, it already is.
It already is. It already is to a certain extent, but it's only going to get worse. Like, basically, it's going to become like lower than the NHL. Sorry, Linda.
I think the NHL is growing. Excuse you. It just had its highest viewership ever. So
I think baseball is very regional, and I don't think that's going to totally be lost.
But everybody knew who Ken Griffey Jr. was. Nobody knows who Mike Trout is. If you only follow basketball, you don't know who Mike Trout is, but everybody knows LeBron James.
Yes.
Yes.
But that's the only player I know. I can't tell you anybody else.
So LeBron James is the only one I know. I don't understand how we got from Ken Griffey Jr. to Mike Trout. Like, they're both exceptional. I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. wanted the limelight when he was more suited for the limelight.
More charismatic, for sure.
Yeah, but they both played on the West Coast, so that's not an excuse for Trout. Like, I don't know. Like, why does nobody know who this generational talent is? Like, his talent should transcend. Like him doing cool stuff on the field should be everywhere.
Stupid blackout rules. Just bad marketing.
But that's the other thing. I wanted to buy my brother-in-law a Mets shirt for Christmas, and because he's a Yankee fan, but when we go to games, he has nothing to wear, because when him and my sister go, he has nothing to wear. So I was like, okay, I'll get Jimmy a Mets shirt. Fanatics was horrible. The selection was absolutely horrible. So I don't know when Fanatics has a monopoly on I think that might have something to do with it too. Like, just the merchandising has gone way downhill.
And
this was for men. MLB. This wasn't even for women. I expect a bad selection.
Right.
this is like the official MLB one. If you go to MLB PA sites like RotoWare and Breaking Tea, the selection's much better, and it's a lot more fun. And they do a lot of referencing from moments of the game. Like, I just saw, I almost bought it What was it? It was like Wilmer. It wasn't a strike. It was a reference to Flores and his not a strike strikeout. Oh, what was it? Oh, I like in-play runs. That's a good shirt. Is it Breaking Tea that had it? I think it was Breaking Tea. But yeah, they have a lot of selection of shirts that are, honestly, to me, a lot better than the regular MLB shop site. Yeah,
but for a player jersey. But for, like, he's a Yankee fan. He doesn't want, like, anything specific like that. Like, I just wanted a regular Mets shirt. And there was none to be found. So I ended up going, like, finding this website called, like, Vintage Tees. And I got him a Mr. Mets shirt with the logo from, like, 1963.
Wow.
And the shirt's incredible. And he loved it because Mr. Mets makes everybody happy. But, like, I had to really do some research to just find one plain men's Mets shirt.
Yep. Yeah,
geez. Ugh. So, like, Fanatics having a monopoly on the merchandising has made everything a lot worse, I think, too.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Wilmer didn't go. That was the shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, just backtracking for a sec.
Yeah. Since this lockout is continuing, we will continue to find, you know, creative ways to make engaging content for you guys during the off season when there's not much to talk about. We're planning a discussion next podcast of The Captain, which I already kind of previewed because we're reading that right now. And so we're going to talk about it. David Wright's memoir, which should be a fun discussion, a little bit of a book pod. And we're trying to, you know, plan some sort of maybe like a League of Their Own watch along with a chat room if you guys are interested in things like that. If there are other like things, ideas of like type of off season, you know, lockout content that you guys want to see, like email us, tweet at us. Like, we'd love to hear your ideas. But in the meantime, we will end the show with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Kellyanne Healy, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Okay, I have two. And one is actually a month old, and I didn't realize it was this old, and I haven't mentioned it, but Rutgers basketball.
I know this.
Oh my gosh. They beat the number one team, Purdue, on an insane buzzer beater. Oh my God. Ron Harper Jr. just made this perfect shot with, like, obviously no time left. And it was a three-pointer that won the game, because they were down 68-67 at that point. Oh my God, it was just insane. Oh, if you haven't seen the clip, go watch it. Search for Rutgers versus Purdue. It will pop up immediately. So that is walk-off win number one. The second one is, I finally got all of my grades today, and I had a straight A semester for my first semester of grad school. I'm very happy about that.
Congratulations. Yay! That's awesome.
Good Thank job.
You. Yay. I like straight
I knew
A's.
You could do it.
That one course was very stressful.
Oh, there's always that one, but yes. Still, I knew you could do it.
Thank you. I could not have done it without your support.
Of course. That's what I'm here for. I do not. Sorry, but I don't miss those days.
All right, and that's fine. Linda, onward and upward.
Linda Servage, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win, since you brought up hockey, was I went to the Rangers game on Sunday. It was my birthday present.
Happy birthday again.
Thank you. I was a little hesitant about going, but everybody had to be vaxxed, and they did check.
Well, that's good.
And I was a little nervous, so, like, I didn't really eat or drink, so I just kept my mask on the whole time. Like, I would quick take a sip, then, like, put my mask back on. But where our seats were, there was really, like, nobody around us, so I felt kind of okay about it. But it was the first time I had been there in, like, 2 years. Allison, the last game I had went to was when we went.
Yeah.
So this was the first game also in, like, the post Henrik Lundqvist era. So that was also kind of hard. And then also what was also hard, Kellyanne was, Panarin got COVID right before the game and didn't play.
Oh no.
I didn't even see Panarin. So I was expecting a full blowout, like they're without their best player. They were playing one of the best teams in the league. And they ended up winning 4-0.
That's nice.
I got to see a hat trick. So everybody threw their hats on the ice.
Ooh, I know what that is.
Yes.
That's like one thing in hockey that I kind of understand.
It was my first.
That's because it's also a soccer thing.
Yes, that's true.
It was my first hat trick. I've ever seen a hat trick.
That's amazing. That's great. That's a great birthday gift.
Yeah. So, like, I got to see everybody throwing their hats on the ice. And they also got a shutout. So I saw Igor Shesterkin. He's Henrik's heir apparent. And he's really good. And so he got a shutout for the Rangers. And then they show Henrik wished everybody a happy new year, and they played that on the big screen. The garden went nuts. So I'm not going to survive Henrik Lundqvist night when they retire his number, which I also have tickets to. Because I don't know if you knew this, Kellyanne, but, like, he never got a goodbye. Like, it would be like if David.
No, Wright I didn't had, know that. Because wasn't he on briefly on another team after he left the Rangers? Like, very briefly.
Well, what happened was the last game, when me and Allison were there, they were getting blown out. It was Igor's first game back from getting into a car accident. Said he had broken ribs, so he was not sharp. So they took Igor out and put Henrik in. So then, like, the garden got a went all crazy, and we're like, Henrik. And so that was March 7th, 2020. And the next week, obviously, everything shut down. And then they came back, played in the bubble, so there were no fans. And then after that, they let Lundqvist go. And then he signed with the Capitals, but then he had a heart condition and couldn't play. So then he retired. So he never played in front of fans again. So he never got a goodbye.
Oh.
So it'd be like David Wright never getting a book. Like if the David Wright game never happened, if they just said, all right, bye, see you later. And nobody got to say, you know, say goodbye for the final time. That's always kind of bothered me that, like, it was just so unceremonious. Like, he did everything for this.
Well, now he's going to be honored.
And now, yes, so finally he's going to, and he's back as a commentator too. So I get to see his pretty face on my screen again. And he seems to have made peace with it, but still I haven't made peace with how it ended.
No, that like truly is not great.
Yeah, so be prepared in a couple weeks when I'm a sobbing mess for my walk-off win will be Henrik Lundqvist night. but yeah, so they did, you know, do a good job, you know, checking the vaccinations and everything. And I do like the way the garden is always decorated. I always try to go to a Ranger game around the holidays because I always love how they decorate. So, you know, but it really was. It had been almost a full 2 years since I had been there.
Wow.
And yeah, I was like, oh, wow. It's really been a long time. So that's my walk-off line. I did have a really, really fun day at the Rangers game, which I was not expecting. Because like I said, I was expecting a full-on disaster, but it was actually really good. It was really fun. And I had a really good time. So yeah, go Rangers.
Sometimes you get a pleasant surprise.
You do. Yes. And those are the best.
Yeah, those are always the best. My walk-off win is just a simple one that I had a nice, like, pretty chill holiday, and I got to see my family, and we got to see Michael's family, and it was really nice. And, you know, it was just, I got to, you know, open presents two different times because we do with my family on Christmas and then Michael's family on New Year's. So we kind of did like two Christmases, and it was really nice. And
well, you're within the 12 days of Christmas, so.
Exactly. So I don't know. I feel like, you know, now more than ever with COVID happening, like getting to spend time with family is even more precious. So yeah, it was just really nice. So that's my walk-off win for this week. In the meantime, you can go to amazingavenue.com, check out all of our lockout content. I recently did an interview with the managing editor of Camden Chat about Buck Showalter. And I still have another Buck Showalter piece in the works, kind of part two of the like Baltimore perspective of Buck Showalter series I'm working on. So you can look out for that. You can look out for Linda's Chris Bryant piece that she has in the works, and all of our other awesome off-season content. And the prospect lists are happening right now too. So check out that from our minors staff who work so hard on them every single year. So proud of their work. So please read the prospect lists going up right now during this week. You can follow the site Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Kellyanne?
LRBELLARE BEE.
You can subscribe to this show, Amazing Avenue Audio, wherever you get your podcasts from. And please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting.
Hey everyone, it's Nick Kwa, podcast critic for New York Magazine. From my humble beginnings as an avid listener to joining some of the best writers in the world at Vulture, I'm incredibly lucky to do what I do. So here's the thing. There are a ton of podcasts out there, and finding something new to listen to can be a bit of a mess. My newsletter, 1.5 Speed, is an attempt to make your life easier. Every week, we point you to a handful of podcasts that we think deserves your attention, with just enough context to help you decide if you want to give it a shot. Maybe you have your staples, but want to try something different for a change. Maybe you want something more experimental. 1.5 Speed doesn't discriminate. We've recommended everything from the Ezra Klein Show to a podcast recognizing a different frog every week.
enter your email at vulture.com/speed to get recommendations sent to you every Wednesday. The newsletter is free to sign up and completely free to read. Sign up for 1.5 speed at vulture.com/speed. By the way, I'm a 1.2 guy myself.